as we return to our coverage of the 2016 Association of the U.S. Army Conference in downtown Washington. We're speaking with several of the Army's key leaders this week. Next up, Patrick Murphy, the Undersecretary of the Army, the Army's number two civilian. He was previously a congressman from Pennsylvania and is himself an Army veteran. Along those lines, we started our conversation with a topic he's devoted a significant amount of attention to since taking office this past January, the Army's Soldier for Life initiative.
Well, Soldier for Life means that you are a leader of character for a lifetime of service. So whether you do 3 years in the military or 30 years, you are a soldier for life. And what that means is that when you are in the military, everyone's going to leave at some point. But the expectation that you will continue to serve. Colonel Adam Rock, it was just an initiative, Soldier for Life initiative, was started a few years ago, but we're doubling down on it to make sure that that transition, that when you go back into civilian society, that you will be an active member, that you will have, be expected to continue to serve your community. You look at right now, soldiers, when they leave, are more likely to be employed than non-veterans. They're more likely to make $10,000 a year on salary more than civilians. They're more likely to be Little League coaches and pastors in their churches and Boy Scout troop leaders than civilians. These are all positive things that means our soldiers are civic assets to our nation.
Right. And unfortunately, because of the Army drawdown, there are more soldiers leaving right now, not by their own choice. What are some of the things that you are doing and can do to make sure that they have employment and do make a smooth transition?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we lose about 100,000 soldiers a year. We bring in about 132,000 soldiers a year, and we're in a talent management business. So these job fairs and expecting and making these private sector folks and nonprofits and corporate America, giving them access to our soldiers when they're on post before they leave. So don't just wait till they're out processing to say, well, what are you going to do next? We start the transition period 12 months out, and it's been going very well. So when you look at the Army used to pay over $600 million a year in unemployment benefits. Because even though it's really the VA and the Department of Labor that's responsible for the transition of employment of our soldiers, now we're saying we're paying the bill, so we're much more active in that. So partnering with corporate America and private industry, making sure that they have access on post, we're giving soldiers training programs, and these programs have been very, very effective. And when we went from paying over $600 million a year, this year we'll be paying less than $200 million a year. So that is a major savings that we could put toward readiness, which is our number one priority.
Right. And I mentioned the reserve earlier. What are you doing to make sure that folks from the AC, as they leave, see that as an option? I think the reserve is starting to meet some of their accession targets, which they haven't for the last few years. I assume some of the Soldier for Life initiative has something to do with that.
No doubt. Again, that expectation that you are a leader of character for a lifetime of service, so that you continue to serve and you continue to serve. You know, we are one Army, one fight, and that's active duty, National Guard, and reserves. And Jared, as you mentioned, the majority of our soldiers, 54% of the American soldiers out there, are actually in the reserve component. And so this year, it'll be announced this year, or we just ended our fiscal year on Friday, we have met our recruitment goals. And in fact, we have about 16,000 soldiers in the program starting for next year already that we didn't have to tap into. So reserve hit the recruitment goals, our active duty met recruitment goals as National Guard. And I'll tell you, when you look at right now, they said that we weren't going to make it this year. They said we weren't going to make it because the economy is going much stronger, that we're 15 years, the longest wars in American history in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we met it. We met it because we have great leadership. Jimmy McConville, General Jeff Snow, and a lot of other folks, and Secretary Fanning and Secretary Milley have made it a real priority.
Also related to accessions, and I saw you speak a couple months ago in front of a big group of Army public affairs folks, and the main takeaway from that conference from your own marketing chief, I think, was that the public perceives the Army as sort of vanilla and ordinary. The brand perception maps say it's the place you can't go if you get into the Air Force. And nonsense, of course, but that's the perception anyway. Do you see that as a problem? Is it something the Army's trying to actively address in terms of changing public perception?
Well, I'm very clear that we have to have some swagger. We are America's varsity team, so that when the President of the United States or a governor calls 911, they are calling our Army, and we play home games and away games. So whether it was 13 Americans being killed in Louisiana with flooding 2 weeks ago, and that governor, who is an Army soldier, Governor Edwards, who was an Army officer, West Point graduate, when he called 911, we sent 1,300 of our American soldiers there to help out. If it's the Ebola crisis from a year ago in Africa, when we sent the 101st Airborne Division in, when it's Afghanistan or Iraq, I mean, you look at the longest wars in American history, 96% of the casualties, unfortunately, in Iraq and Afghanistan come from the Army and the Marine Corps. You know, we are the land forces. So we're very, very proud of our record, and we want to make sure that we're taking the fight to ISIS and Al-Qaeda where they are, and we're doing that, and we have a lot to be proud of. But there is no doubt, Jared, that the United States Army is America's varsity team, and we got some great JV teams, our brothers and sisters that are on those teams, but you know, there's only one Army.
Readiness, an ongoing theme of these conferences year after year. I'm sure it'll come up again as the Secretary speaks later. How are we doing as the Army continues to draw down to 450 in the AC? How do you feel? What are the main challenges that you see at this point on the readiness front?
Yeah, there is a challenge, but let's be right. We need to be ready to fight tonight. And it would be the ultimate sin not to send these young men and women into harm's way without being trained. Now, Jared, we don't want our soldiers to have a fair fight. We want them to have the technical and tactical advantage over our enemy. And so that's why we're doubling the CTC, the Combat Training Center, rotations of our troops in the National Guard level, because we've been training, we've been fighting as a total army with the National Guard reserves and active duty component. So as we train as one army and as we fight as one army, we need to make sure that we are ready for the next war. And that next war, you know, might not be counterinsurgency or counterterrorism operations. It might be the high-end ground combat against a near-peer competitor like Russia, China, Iran, or North Korea. The world is becoming more and more volatile. You see what Russia is doing invading other countries. You look at North Korea, over 120 missiles launched with the new regime there, which is triple of what his father fired. So that's what we're preparing for, that high-end ground combat. While maintaining our proficiency that we have been for 15 years in counterterrorism and counterinsurgency.
In your role with the Army Chief Management Officer hat, I wanted to ask you a question about the civilian workforce, just because we've just narrowly averted another government shutdown, eighth year in a row, I think, of continuing resolutions.
Yeah, Jared, when I left Congress 6 years ago, man, it's been all downhill since.
Yeah.
But I hear you. But I will tell you, that's when I talk about the Army, I talk about the 1.3 folks that are in the Army.
Yeah.
And that's the 1,015,000 soldiers and the 300,000 civilians. We are one team. When I joined the Army at 19, and I became an Army officer, and I went on to teach at West Point, and I deployed twice in combat, you know, I wouldn't have been a professor at West Point, at U.S. Congressman age 33, or now the Undersecretary of the Army, if it was not for the Army. And I'm proud to be one of the civilian leaders of this Army. We have a great team. And those folks, you know, these 300,000 civilians that work on our team and part of our family, you know, they could go on and make probably more money. Frankly, they could make a lot more money in the private sector. But they love our country, and they're part of the Army team that is America's varsity team. And I just go to them and I say, listen, I know it was a bad year. The government shut down, the layoffs, all that. But we're righting the ship, and we're making sure that doesn't happen again. And we're doing what we need to do with Congress. I've testified now 4 times. When I was, you know, acting secretary this past year, and I know Secretary Fanning prior and he will since, that we need to make sure that the Congress understands that, you know, we've taken our cuts, that we appreciate their support. But, you know, the cuts over the last 6 years, you know, it's been a 46% cut since I left it as appropriator in Congress to now. So our Army budget when I left was $243 billion. Now it's $148 billion, so almost $100 billion cut with our Army. And this is before ISIS, before Russia invaded other countries, et cetera, before the issues with the South China Sea. So we need to do more with less, no doubt about it. But we're doing it as one Army team.
So as you kind of indicated, I mean, you're not in charge of the appropriations process anymore. But when you go around and talk to these folks in the civilian workforce, what do you do to instill confidence in them that, you know, this is a place that you want to be for the long term, and we're gonna have your back?
Well, I think they recognize, and I'm blunt with them as a former member of the U.S. Congress, that I think even Congress recognizes what they did with sequestration and was a mistake, and we need to make sure that doesn't happen again. But what we could focus on as a team is to make sure they understand that there is not plans to have to do what the layoffs and the et cetera that we had in the past. that we are, you know, we made the cuts we need to make, and we are now on a steady state, and that we need to kind of band together and come together as one team in one fight.